All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are now chatting with Brian London, editor of the Gold Newsletter, and also our host down at that New Orleans Investment Conference that happened not that long ago. Shad and I were just down there. It was November 2nd to 5th. You can still get access to the recordings of the speeches and all the talks from the conference. Click the link in the show notes. That'll take you to the site where you can register for all of those recordings. And Brian, Shad, and I have been talking a fair bit to the people that were at the conference and a lot of the companies that were there. And I've been going to this conference for over a decade, and it was, I think, probably the busiest that I have seen in terms of attendees and also exhibitors. The exhibit hall was quite full. I think it just goes to show kind of the bull market that we are in for, especially metal stocks. But there are a number of different companies that also exhibit there, including some energy stocks and some financial stocks. Just a quick little overview then, Brian, of the conference. What did you see in terms of attendance and in terms of exhibitors?
Yeah, the attendance was spectacular. You know, there weren't only a lot of people, there were a lot of happy people, as you can imagine, after the moves that we've had. And the big determinant or the big indicator that I tell people is not just how many people come to our event, but because they're all really highly qualified, really smart people, they pay a lot of money to come to our event, to travel to New Orleans, stay in a hotel for 4 or 5 days, et cetera. So really successful, smart investors. And the indicator isn't whether they've shown up, but what they do when they get there. And it seemed like they were fairly aggressively buying, or at least very interested in all of the companies on our exhibit hall, in our exhibit hall. And I think that's a great sign for the market. You know, we have a lot of fears, a lot of worries that we're ahead of ourselves. And, you know, a lot of the people who have been investing in this sector for many years have been trimming their positions. And while that's never a bad idea to take profits like we've had, what I was telling our attendees is that the extraordinary gains that we've seen are not so much a function or an indication of how overbought or ahead of itself the market has gotten, but rather an indication of how undervalued the sector was for so long. You know, when you have so many companies that are selling for less than $10 an ounce in the ground for years. And, you know, now they're selling for $20 or $30 an ounce in the ground. That's, a 2 or 3X move, but it doesn't necessarily mean, it really doesn't mean that they're overvalued by any measure. And those kinds of comparisons run across the spectrum from exploration stocks all the way to the big producers. It's just not a sector that is ahead of itself or overvalued by any standard metric. And now, you know, $4,000 gold producers having $2,500 an ounce of margin in profit in every ounce they produce, nothing is valued appropriately to a situation like that.
Well, Brian, I'm so glad that you just mentioned that, because that's something we've been talking about on the show quite a bit, really, for months now, that even though a lot of these stocks have moved up 3x, 4x, 5x, they're impressive moves, but they're coming off really low levels. But when you look at the valuations of where not just the gold stocks, but where the silver stocks are, even some of the copper stocks related to the metals and where their ounces in the ground are being valued, it's still paltry compared to where it's been in other sectors. I think a big benefit of your conference is just talking and networking with all the other investors there, whether they're companies that are there and management teams that are also investors or just investors in attendance. And I was asking everybody, you know, where do you think we are? You know, where do you think the valuations are? And a lot of people were doing that cautiously optimistic thing where they were optimistic, but worried that things were pulling back. You know, did you get any different feedback when you talked to investors? Did you find that there was new people there hitting the bid, or were there seasoned investors exiting overall? You know, what kind of a vibe did you get from the investors there?
Yeah, I think they were seasoned or smart. We did have a number of newbies to the sector who were saying, you know, it looks like everybody made a lot of money over the last year. I'm new to the sector. Is it too late for me? How do I get involved? Kind of a thing. But that was a minority. You know, that was maybe 15, 20% of the attendees. There were, as you would expect, a lot of very sophisticated, experienced investors in the sector. But I didn't see anybody just blatantly hitting the bid. I think they're turning the soil, you know, in their portfolio, as it were. They're exchanging some stories for other stories, some that have gone up, the 2 and 3 X's, finding some that really have been left behind. There are a few of those left out there that have yet to really move. Less and less, it seems, every day, but there are a few out there. So we don't have people really just blatantly selling out right now and, you know, taking their chips off the table for the very reasons I just talked about. I think it was a pretty popular opinion that there's so much money being made in the sector. We're just really in the early innings.
Brian, what do you think about that whole concept of shuffling or horse trading some of the winners for some of the laggards? Because look, there are many stocks actually that are 5X, 6, 7X from where they were, let's say, beginning of this year. But then there's also probably even more stocks that are only 2 or 3X from where they started, and then very few that haven't even moved yet. Do you subscribe to that strategy of trimming some of the outperformers and buying into some of the ones that, while they're still up, aren't up as much as, I guess, some of the better stocks?
Yeah, it's an interesting evolution we're witnessing in the sector right now, which, you know, the easy money has definitely been made, but the tide is still rising and lifting all the boats as well. But going forward, I think the challenge for us is not just being positioned, it's trying to find what the biggest winners are going to be, because it's most of these stocks are going to be winners. And so it creates a different situation than we've had over the last decade or so, really even longer than that. It harkens back to the issues we had in the 2000s. You're looking for the companies that are going to outpace the rest, but still your losers, as it were, instead of losing, you know, 50% or more, your losers are actually gaining a little bit because everything's rising. So the challenge is trying to find those faster horses in the race and selling some of your other ones. Now, when you have an exploration story that's made a really big move, maybe you're 5 or 6X, it is a good idea to trim back on an exploration story after you've made those kinds of moves. You know, you can look back on some of these big winners, and like, you know, Great Bear in our portfolio went up 85 times from the entry point. And you can go back and wish that you would have held every share all the way to the end of that story. But you can recognize too that that would have been a pretty stupid thing to do. It would have been maximized your profits, but it would not have been the prudent thing to do, not to take profits along the way. In discovery plays, you absolutely do need to take those profits along the way.
Well, Brian, I think another fascinating part of your conference is the newsletter writer tours that these different folks go on, where they grab a bunch of their subscribers and go to the exhibit hall and talk to the companies and interview the companies and then kind of huddle up afterwards. I was listening to a couple of them, from Gerardo Del Real or Lobo Tigre, and kind of eavesdropping on them. Maybe highlight that part of your conference and any takeaways that investors had by, you know, not just trying to go it alone, but having a seasoned veteran there to guide them through the conference.
Yeah, that's something we started, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. And it's such a highlight. You know, all of our exhibitors, you guarantee all of our exhibitors some attention from the investors, and attention that's directed by an experienced hand in the sector who knows what questions to ask. And some of our tour guides, as it were, take it a step further. They then take their group after they've toured a number of companies and either bring them by other booths, or they take them out in the hall and start answering their questions about what they just talked about, the various companies, a real kind of how-to session on how to invest in these stocks. So it's a tremendous value, especially for those newbies to the sector, people who are trying to get up to speed as quickly as possible on how to invest in the sector. And we also had a bit of a pre-conference boot camp on what to look for and what questions to ask companies. So for anyone who's interested, you know, anywhere along the spectrum, from a novice to expert, there you can really gain a lot from those tours.
Brian, just curious, because you do work with a lot of newsletter writers at that conference. We bring a lot of newsletter writers on this show, but in all fairness, we don't bring everybody on. I do have a criteria of the newsletter writers that I think are higher quality and the ones that I want to give some of the show exposure to. How do you go about selecting the newsletter writers that you have at the show? And any tips for some of the new investors in the space when they see all these different newsletter writers promoting all kinds of different, mostly junior companies, but some mid-tiers as well? How do you know the newsletter writers that should be listened to rather than the ones that are simply just trying to promote the flavor of the month for whatever reason they might have?
Yeah, I think it's somewhat experience. You know, I've met just about everybody and know everybody pretty well. I think you have to look kind of at the business models. If it's sponsored coverage, if it's paid coverage, well, obviously you're going to take that with a more than a few grains of salt and wonder if it's independent. In the old days, there used to be, generally speaking, if you had a newsletter, you did not front run your own recommendations. Then it kind of evolved over the years to where everybody just about says, not, you know, I'm going to recommend a stock and I'm going to buy this stock after you've had a chance to buy it. They say, this is what I'm buying. So they actually buy the stock and then recommend it. I think I'm the last person that's old school enough that I don't front run my own recommendations in Gold Newsletter. But there are fewer and fewer real newsletter writers out there that are objectively covering the market. So it's, you know, the number of available newsletters is winnowing down, in my view, because so many of them are just out there taking money to promote stocks. You know, I don't know if you found that as well, but, you know, on our website at goldnewsletter.com, we have a free report, Investor's Guide to Gold and Silver, where I list all of the newsletters out there that I think are the best and the ones that investors should subscribe to, as well as all the conferences that they should go to meet management teams. So yeah, it's tough to be a newsletter writer as a business model, because subscription revenue, especially if you have much of a staff to support, really doesn't pay the bills. So that's why we've seen a number of them go toward the sponsored coverage model. And, you know, I just don't think that gets you really unbiased. Obviously, it doesn't get you unbiased opinions.
Well, Brian, in addition to the newsletters and all the booths that people can walk and all the other investors they can network with, you have some amazing content on the stage. Now, I'll admit that I was tied up in many parts of the conference and didn't catch all of it. But when I did go into the conference hall, I caught some of the different panels. I watched a couple that Rick Rule officiated. You were on a lot of them or monitoring some of them. Any of the key takeaways that you want to share with investors here with our audience that you think were germane to investing in the resource space?
Yeah, it was amazing. And you know, now you've got me stumped, because so many speakers, or really all of them, really came with great content, wonderful insights. And I really take that as a point of pride, because I read everyone, I watch everyone, and I think I have a good idea of who brings value. And there's no other event out there, quite frankly, that brings the kind of value we have in terms of content. We have some 45 speakers, of which you won't find more than one or two at any other event. So great value. If you look down the roster and the list of presentations, there were just more, so many of them. Our mining share panel had some great tips on it, great picks. Last year's top pick was on the panel, top performing pick was 1911 Gold, which went up 700%. So I think if anyone buys our recordings, and that panel alone will pay for that many times over. This is really the elite of the elite, picked by the elite of the mining stock analysts. So a lot of tremendous presentations out there. You know, a lot of them pointed toward how crazy these markets are. Bob Proctor in particular has incredible charts pointing toward how overvalued the stock market is and undervalued relative to that the gold market is. So it's interesting. He's not always bullish on gold. And while he predicts a liquidity event ahead for the stock market that will knock the wind out of gold temporarily, he thinks gold is going up over $20,000, which is, you know, remarkable.
So, Brian, outside of all the obviously bullish precious metals comments and everyone celebrating how well their mostly precious metals stocks have done, anything stand out to you in terms of other commentary for either other metals or a certain classification of stocks, even if they are precious metals, that seem to be getting a little bit more attention but seem to be the ones that haven't moved yet? Maybe the best opportunities that you heard?
Yeah, a number of people pointed toward energy as being the undervalued sector relative to precious metals. And Rick Rule in particular has been talking about that. And one of the points that I've made is, you know, these relative valuations, they are great and they show you which sectors are overbought and which ones are oversold, but they're not a good timing mechanism for trading. And that, of course, we've seen energy get more undervalued since then. But, you know, if you have tremendous profits rolling into an undervalued sector and then buying more as if the price, if the investments go on sale, is the kind of strategy where you can really maximize your gains eventually when the sector turns. So that was kind of a theme. You know, we do have companies, we had companies in critical metals and rare earths and copper as well, which I think are all sectors that for their own reasons, not necessarily the monetary factors that we see driving gold and silver, for their own reasons, and really across the board from base and critical metals, battery metals and the like, it's an extraordinary time because there are so many opportunities out there with fundamentally bullish stories.
Brian, did you find yourself buying any new stocks while you were at your own conference?
I didn't have time. That's crazy. There are companies that I really want to buy that are buying more of in some cases that, you know, number one, I have to sell something at this point. I'm so up to my ears in mining stock paper. I have to sell something to buy something. But there are some remarkable values out there, you know. Cassiar Gold is something I shake my head out at. You know, they have over 2 million ounces of gold, huge property position, remarkably undervalued compared to their peer group. I think that's one that the markets overlooked. I think Sun Summit had a wonderful drill hole late summer and stock popped and then the market forgot about it. And now they have the money to go back and follow up, which they're doing. That's another one I really like. And I think that Ridgeline had good news during the conference. It had a discovery hole, very, very high zinc. And they had the bad luck to release the news on that big downdraft day when gold lost about $50 or so. They thought they were going to gain 25% on the day with that discovery hole release, and they lost 25%. So, you know, that's one I think that's probably a good value right now as well.
Hey, Ridgeline was brought up in our first couple segments with Matt Geiger as well. But Brian, just I guess one more quick comment regarding some of these drill plays, Ridgeline being a good example, but there's been a number of good examples out there where these exploration stocks have run up quite a bit, 2, 3, 4x ahead of results, usually on the back of financings as well. As these results come out, they really need to be, it seems like, amazing. If we're talking gold, they need 200 to 300 gram meter holes outside of just what we typically would say 100 gram meter hole moves the market. But that's also, again, because these stocks have run up so much. So portfolio management wise, kind of tying back into what you were saying about some of these exploration stocks, should we be taking profits before results because of how elevated the market has gotten for some of them and just what the market seems to expect as a good result these days?
Well, I don't think you can make a blanket statement. You know, every story, especially in exploration, is different. But you make a great point that the quality of the drill results that we're seeing are, have been, I think, remarkable over this past exploration season, going from the summer and going into the late summer. I think that's partly due to the fact that companies have been cash strapped for so long. They've been doing the inexpensive stuff, but scientifically, technically valid work of, you know, mapping and maybe geophysical soil sampling, rock sampling, trenching, everything but the expensive drilling that the market loves, and the market ignores all this other stuff. So they've been having these prospects that really need to be drilled. And finally, you know, the dam is broken, they've got money, and the drills are turning, and they're turning up even better results because they've been able to really do all the necessary preparatory work. You know, I was talking to Bob Bishop, who came this year, and he made the comment to me that he was amazed at the quality of companies in the exhibit hall and their quality of results, that he think it's really taking huge steps forward from years past. And you know he has decades of experience in the sector. He thinks it's as good right now as it has ever been from an actual value, actually, you know, good results standpoint out there. So do you sell these companies that are developing really good plays? I think it goes back to you try to find the faster horses, the exploration plays that are getting more attention, because there's a whole lot of companies out there that have great projects that aren't getting that attention. So maybe the catalyst for a lot of these companies is what is going to get the markets to finally look at them.
All right, Brian, we got to wrap it up here. As always, great having you on the show. And thanks again for hosting us down in New Orleans. Next year's conference in 2026 is happening right before, and the final day being on Halloween. So everyone that can make it, hope to see you down there next year. In the meantime, all of you, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. To listen to all our daily editorials and company updates from this prior week, all you have to do is visit our website, kereport.com, or on your podcast player, or on YouTube, just search The KE Report. That's where you can find all of our recordings. As always, everyone, keep in touch with Shad and I, and I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.